finding it a bit hard to keep up and nodding off, you'll know how many sections are still to go. So, so the first one is I'm just going to tell you about how I got into teaching, what my route was through education, and how my decision was kind of led into to becoming a teacher. And then I'll just give a brief overview of my career thus far, and then kind of what I'm actually doing at the moment, my day-to-day work. I'm going to talk about the impact that being a Christian has on my job, and then just briefly talk about the future and what I think the future might hold for me in my current job. So I was always very sporty. I don't want to be at all boastful in my ability in sport, but I do want to appropriately acknowledge it as a gift from God. I do believe it's a gift that God gave me, which I'm truly grateful for. It's allowed me many years of enjoyment. I've made so many friends through playing sport and through being involved in sport. And it's enabled me to build a career. That it was my love of sport that really got me into teaching. So without that, I probably would not be doing the job I'm doing now, as none of the other subjects quite took my fancy. So, yeah, I believe that being sporty was a gift from God, unlike public speaking, which I'm not particularly gifted in. So please bear with me this evening. And if I lose track, just kind of maybe give me a reassuring smile or something. So I had thought, I'm a PE teacher and I'm a head of Key Stage 3. And I thought, right, well, how can I best kind of give people a feel for what I actually do on a day-to-day basis? And the thought crossed my mind of coming dressed in my tracksuit with my whistle and my stopwatch and getting rid of all the chairs and having people running laps, and we could go slam dunks and basketballs and stuff. But, yeah, I thought, well, if we advertised it like that, maybe no one would come. So, well, I know Graham would be there. But, I just wanted to kind of break it into the sections that I've... that I've mentioned earlier. So, any games, any team games, anything involving a ball and a racket in particular, I've always kind of really enjoyed, had an affinity towards. I enjoy doing anything to do with these, be it on a beach, on a court, like in a garden, anywhere. Our lounge, those of you that have been around to our house, is not that big, but we manage to still play table tennis and football matches from the radiator to the back door. And so I was blessed with a sporty boy as well, so we can continue with my passion, and he enjoys it too. Sport was always a very big part of my childhood. Never dolls. I've got an older sister and a younger brother. My brother was very sporty, and I guess my sister kind of lost out a little bit there. There she was having a younger sister who then never wanted to play dolls. So, so I always had this love of sport. And then enjoyed all the sport opportunities at school. Went through GCSEs and A-levels, both at GCSE and A-level. PE was my best grade. There's no coincidence there. It's, you know, the passion I have, and it's not all just running around and getting a GCSE. You do have to do some theory as well. And I always really enjoyed the theory behind the behind sport, learning about motivation, learning about the body, the way in which the body works. So the anatomy and physiology and everything to do with the theory of sport as well. I then went on and did a sports science degree because at this point I was really torn between physiotherapy and teaching. So all through my A-levels and you're having your career interviews, it was those two things that really attracted me. And I thought if I did a sports science degree, then at the end of that, I discovered that I could either do a two-year top-up to become a physio or a one-year to be a teacher. So I kind of left my options open for as long as possible. During my time at university, during the summer holidays, I did summer camps. I went and coached in America, coached football in America. And my role on a summer camp was... I lived with the kids for like 8 weeks. So it was a private girls' summer camp up in Maine. And that was an amazing experience and really gave me a taster of teaching because it was a very intense time that you spent with the children, and it became more about just enjoying sport and enjoying the thought of teaching sport. It was actually working alongside young people. And I really, really enjoyed that. While I was at university as well, I did some coaching work. I coached for Charlton Athletic enjoyed that as well. So any opportunities to earn money that involved coaching or going on summer camps in America, I kind of relished those opportunities. And got a lot from them, and I think got a taster for what teaching might be like. And it just felt amazing being paid for something that I really love doing. It felt like this, you know, this didn't feel like work, and they're paying me to do it. So it was amazing. So that really was what guided me to, at the end of my sports science degree, to thinking, you know, to go and do a PGCE, to apply for a PGCE course. It wasn't just the 14 weeks holiday that attracted me into teaching. There was more to it than that, although who could resist that? So I went ahead and applied for a PGCE, which I did at Reading University. I absolutely loved it. It was a very intense year, very intense course. But you kind of, you know, dropped in a little bit at the deep end. The start of the course was very nice, with seminars about teaching, and you know, you had to read a few books and write a few essays, and then you were put in a school and then told, right, off you go, which was a whole different experience. But I did love it, and I've never really looked back. To do sport every day, to get paid for it, to have a job in which no day is ever the same. It's a different experience every day, even with the same classes. It's just, you know, no day is ever the same in my job. And that's something that I really like. I did try office work for a year in between my sports science degree and doing my PGCE. I took a year out and worked in recruitment, and was offered a training to become a recruitment consultant. But I very quickly realized that was not my calling, to be in an office. No offense to those of you that work in offices. You know, we're all gifted in different ways and enjoy different things, but it really wasn't for me. I needed something a bit more active, and I loved working with young people. So starting a career as a teacher, in which I realized as I went through my PGCE, it was much more than teaching sport. This was about getting alongside young people, getting alongside kids that are, you know, coming from 11, you know, up to the age of 18. And there's a huge transition that occurs, which, you know, I'm going to talk a bit more about that later. But it felt like something I was passionate about, and something that I could see myself doing and really enjoying. So I went for it, did the PGCE, and got my first job at Deanfield School, which I know some people here have some connections with. And I taught there from September 2001 till April 2007. My first year, my NQT year, while the rest of my friends were at different schools, mainly in the local area, and we'd get together every now and then, and you know, we'd say, "Oh, how are you getting on?" And they'd say, "Oh, I'm allowed to observe GCSE PE lessons, and next year they're going to give me my own class." And I thought, "Well, that sounds amazing," because my NQT year at Deanfield, I was teaching A-level PE, both year 12 and year 13, and A-level psychology, which was a subject I hadn't even studied. So it really was dropped in the teaching, you know, a career in teaching, but dropped in completely at the deep end. And I just needed to stay at least a week ahead of the students and try and maintain their progress. But they got their predicted grades, just in case you're worrying about that. During my second year at Deanfield, I was then kind of prompted by one of the deputy heads to go for a head of year role, which I thought, I'll go for the interview. There's going to be quite a field of people. It would be good experience, but I kind of went for it, not really expecting to get it, as I'd just completed 1 year. But I was appointed, and that, again, was a very, very steep learning curve. All of a sudden, I was now in my second year of teaching. I had 240 12 to 13-year-olds that I was ultimately responsible for, a team of 8 tutors, all of which were far more experienced than me. Some had been teaching for years, and you know, I just really feel that was a very, very steep learning curve. I enjoyed it, but it was really hard work, and it was absolutely the grace of God that brought me through that, and it, like, helped me to be enthusiastic and recognize that even though I was, you know, line managing the team of tutors, I had so much to learn from them, and that this was going to be probably a case of me learning more from them than me leading them for the first couple of years. So I enjoyed that. I then had Callum, and my career took a back seat. I took some maternity time out, and then was hoping to go back to working 3 days a week. But Deanfield offered me a position of 3 days a week, but spread over 5 days. So it was like lessons here and there. At the time, I was living out in Bracknell, and so to get to Tilehurst, and there was one particular day I would teach the first lesson and then teach the fifth lesson, which was the last lesson, but not get paid for the bit in between. So you can imagine that was a time of real difficulty with kind of knowing what to do. And it was absolutely the Lord's work in opening up an opportunity for me before I actually even ended that academic year to move to Langtree School in Woodcote. In the April of 2007, they needed a PE teacher for 3 days a week. And the head teacher at Deanfield was the deputy head that had previously worked at Deanfield and had been my line manager as a head of year. So it was absolutely, God's hand in that provision, without a doubt. So I've been at Langtree ever since. I was 3 days a week until Callum went to school. And then I was hoping to have some kind of an opportunity to take on some more hours. As he was now going to full-time school. But Langtree is such a small school, and it is such a lovely school. It's a really wonderful place to teach that people don't really move. So I actually thought the possibility of being able to work and get more hours there was really quite slim. But left it in God's hands, and within a few weeks of me kind of thinking, right, I need to really start sorting this out, the head of year position became available at Langtree. So I went for it and was appointed head of year. And I went in, before I even went into the interview, I went to the head teacher and I said, I want to be entirely honest with you. At the moment, I'm doing 3 days a week. I'd like to increase my hours. But at the moment, I drop Callum off at school and I pick him up on a Thursday and a Friday. And you can't put a price on that. That's the 2 days a week when I really feel like a proper mum. And so I really didn't want to relinquish that. And if it meant that I couldn't then go forward for the job, then, that was fine. I wanted to lay my cards, before even going for interview. And the head teacher just gave me a smile and a wink, and he said, well, we'll see you at the interview. So, it was a case of the Lord opened up that plan. I don't know anyone, actually, in teaching who has been able to get the kind of hours that I've been able to have since Callum went to full-time school. So there's definitely God's hand and God's plan in all of this. Then a year later, the head of Key Stage 3 position became available. So for those of you that maybe are not quite sure what this entails, so the students come into secondary school at year 7, age 11, and then year 7, year 8, and year 9, that is Key Stage 3. So between the age of 11 to 14, that's Key Stage 3. So, I went for the head of Key Stage 3 position and was appointed for that. So that's what my current job is, to head up Key Stage 3 and then also teach PE still as well. So I still get a bit of sport. I just want to give you an overview of what my head of year role includes. So I'm responsible for the transition process for the students that are coming up from primary schools up to secondary school. Now, this is a really frightening time. Some of you have been through this recently. Some of you have been through it a while ago, but maybe, you will remember what it's like, especially if it's your first child who is now leaving the safety of the primary school where you get, contact with the primary school teacher and it's all, very nice setting, to them all of a sudden maybe catching a bus somewhere that you really kind of feel is out of your touch and out of your control. So it's my job to make it a smoother process for students and for parents as well. And that, over the time where they start applying and then they get their places and then we do the transition to, there's a huge shift in how they feel from when they first get their place at Langtree to when they arrive on their first day in September. So over the last few years, I've developed a thorough program that enables Year 6 students to spend the summer term, the summer holidays, being excited with understandably a few natural nerves, but excited with having had their questions answered, with having got to know myself and some other members of staff, instead of spending the summer petrified that one of those horror stories that they heard in the playground at primary school is actually going to come true. So yeah, it really is a huge, huge change. So what I do is I go into the primary schools and I visit all of the children. This is a benefit of being in a small secondary school. We have an intake of 112, so I'm able to go and visit them all in their primary schools. I do this the first week after June, drive over 150 miles that week, I think, just getting round. It's a very rural catchment area, and we get kids from quite outside of the catchment area too. So I spend a week driving around and meeting with them. And if I had a pound for every time I got a question on homework or bullying or detentions or the big kids, then I could probably retire early, but I haven't been charging yet. That's a wonderful week. I really enjoy that. It's their first contact with someone at secondary school. And even if they've got older siblings, it's a unique experience for them. And, you know, they may have older siblings that are already at Langtree. They may have experiences where they've come up with their parents and older siblings for parents' evenings or for shows. It's a very different experience when it's actually them now in year six, nearing the end of their primary school education and having to think about crossing the bridge to secondary school. You walk in and they're all like looking very scared and very nervous, and it's all very yes miss, no miss, three bags, four miss. And but even still, even in that like half an hour, you can just get a feel for the kids and a feel for which might be the cheeky ones that you might have to keep an eye on in the years to come. So we also then have a taster day. So we invite all the students in, and we put them into groups. The groupings is, you know, quite a thorough process, looking at their educational abilities, and they have some requests with friendships and everything. But there's a lot of work that goes into the groups. So they come in for a taster day. It's a taster for them to see the school, but it's also a test for us to see what the groups that we've established are like. They have a day as a Langtree student, so they get a timetable with six lessons, and I try and make it as varied as possible. And we always try and get some science in there so they can be shown how to light Bunsen burners and have some kind of explosion which wows them. And then they go off struggling with science back at primary schools for the next 6 weeks. So it's a really enjoyable day. And even just those two things, you really see a shift in these year sixes who... when they're in their comfort zone at their primary school, you know, like I see the year sixes at Callum School, and they're very confident, and you know, they're the top of the school, they're the top of the tree, and you know that no one can touch them, they're the year sixes. But when you're going in and you're doing anything to transition, about transition, they completely change and they become really quite vulnerable and they look quite scared. So it's wonderful being able to be a part of a process that gets them from that kind of feeling in that state to feeling much more comfortable. But as I mentioned, it's also important for the parents to feel like they have some kind of support with the transition as well. So we offer parent workshops. We do a welcome evening that the parents and the students come to. We do coffee mornings for parents so they can meet other parents, and they can ask me any questions that they've still got. There really is a lot involved, and the summer term ends up being really, really quite busy. Lots of people think in teaching, oh, summer term, year 11s have gone. You know, it's kind of not quite so busy this term for you. And especially as a PE teacher, I think sometimes people think I'm just on the field with my shorts, you know, just sunbathing and umpiring a bit of rounders. But it's not quite like that. It's actually quite a lot busier than that. That's quite a big part of my job. Academic monitoring for the Key Stage 3 students, looking at data and information from teachers to track students, to track their progress, to spot the ones that, you know, may be starting to dwindle off track. That's another part of my role. Have meetings with students, with parents, as and when necessary. Fundamentally, we're there for education, although there is so much more to your time at school than just being educated. So I do have to jump through the hoops that make, you know, try and keep the kids on track, and that's all very important, helping them achieve their potential, but it's certainly not the be-all and end-all of my job, or I think of kids' experience at secondary school. I'm also responsible for the behaviour management, which can be interesting, dealing with incidents that occur in classes, in the playground, increasingly common to deal with things that have occurred on the internet that then come into school. So this is a new thing that, you know, is starting to really show quite a cause a lot of difficulties for a lot of students. It's very difficult. Our hands are tied to a certain extent. You know, I can't do much about what a student does on Facebook at the weekends, but I'm certainly not ever going to say, well, I'm sorry, I can't do anything, because as far as I'm concerned, if it affects them in school and it affects how safe they feel in school, then there is something to be done. So, it's an interesting one. I've been trained in restorative justice, which was a four-day course that I went on, which was done in two days, and then you had to do some kind of field work, and then another 2 days. And that's I really enjoyed that, because it's always kind of been, and this is, I'll come on to this a little bit later with how my faith affects my job. It's not about, the behaviour management is not about finding out what happened and pointing your finger at the naughty kid and giving them, slapping them, punishment, and this is what's going to happen to you, and, you know, kind of forcing them to apologise, and then, never really talking to them in the same way again and judging them and all that. It's got to be a process in which everybody involved and everybody can benefit from, and that the kids can learn from it. I actually really enjoy the behaviour management side of my job, which is probably a good thing because it takes up a huge amount of my time. But it's a challenge. It really is a challenge, but it is something that I do enjoy. You want to try and teach the kids responsibility and to teach them that, their behaviour does affect other people and the effects it can have. So you're teaching them responsibility, but also making sure that they don't grow up thinking or come through school thinking that it's the mistakes that they make in life that are going to define them. I have those conversations so many times. And sometimes it's very different to, the message maybe they get at home, where they are labelled as being really naughty, really bad, chucked out of the house. Or sometimes when you meet parents and you see the way in which parents deal with the child concerned, you kind of understand why the child is so difficult. And just coming at it from a different approach shows them that actually, maybe there is hope for them. Maybe they're not a complete write-off. My head of year role also means giving emotional support and guidance to students. The teenage years can be a real challenge for kids. I mean, as Andy said in the service this morning, even kids aged 9 to 10, 9 years old are being diagnosed with depression and stress and those kind of related illnesses. And that's, that's very true. We have to, not really often, but too often, I think, for my liking, we're having to make referrals to agencies like CAMHS, child and mental health services, and just trying to get support, because the teenage years, and it is a challenging time for kids. And the world suddenly seems like a really confusing place in which they feel they now need to establish themselves. Who are they in this kind of confusing world? Establish their position. And this can be a really tricky time. Some, as well as just going through your teenage years, some also have very difficult circumstances. Death of a parent, death of a family member, abuse, neglect, could be physical or emotional neglect, rejection from friends, rejection from parents, loneliness. We've got 560 plus students in the school, but that doesn't mean that the kids all feel like, they've got friends. Some of them feel incredibly lonely. You can be in a really busy place but feel completely alone. So supporting kids through all of those kind of circumstances. Illness, some of the kids, during their time might be struck with some kind of illness. Pregnancy, that's one I've had to support a student with recently. Exposure to drugs, many, many more circumstances. So you're constantly looking for signs getting to know the kids as well as possible so that when the alarm bells do ring, you spot them as early as possible and are able to then give them the support that you can. And all of those different examples, and there's many more, cause them to feel a whole host of emotions, angry, anxious, depressed, self-harming is something, you know, which we have to deal with, and kids sometimes don't know how to cope with the emotions and the feelings that they're experiencing, and then make difficult, well, the wrong choices as to cope with those emotions. And it's so, you know, it can be quite a responsibility, but quite a privilege to be able to get alongside young people that are going through that type of thing and actually, you know, support them and try and help them through those difficult times. Child protection is also a part of my role, sorry. So any students that are on the child protection register at our school, I have to liaise and work with social services and other outside agencies. And this can be incredibly heartbreaking work. It's some of the hardest work that I think I kind of have to face. But it's amazing through that, still being able to be someone that maybe can encourage kids and can get alongside them and try and show them a different angle on life. It's really heartbreaking when, you know, children are in a situation that, you know, is poverty, really. It's on our doorstep. Some kids have really incredibly difficult and horrible home lives. And occasionally social services are not able to step in quite so quickly. And so, you know, these kids are being sent home to kind of the same world, the same life. And it can be, it's really quite heartbreaking and difficult. You know, we've had to supply spare uniform, get kid changed on a Friday, wash the uniform and then give it back and get them changed on a Monday and get the uniform that they wear over the weekend back and clean it because that's all the clothes they've got at home. And, you know, it's when you are seeing kids in those kind of circumstances and then how resilient they can also be. It's also then those kids that maybe are causing the problems in the classroom. So being someone, I can't talk openly to staff, it's confidential, all the child protection things, but being someone that can get alongside that child and say, look, you know, I know what's going on at home, I understand. Let's just, you know, let's have a think about how we can make school as easy a place as possible. I really find that a privilege to be able to try and affect their life in a positive way if possible. Assemblies, I deliver assemblies, so I get to speak to 350 students on a topic which at first I felt incredibly daunting, but I don't mind doing it so much anymore. Joe came in and did a fantastic assembly actually at our school, so that's something that I have to do occasionally, maybe once a term. And then managing a team of tutors, so organising the tutorial sessions, a reward system, supporting tutors in dealing with students, in meeting with parents, etc. As I'm going further into my career, I now have less tutors that are so much more experienced than me, so I'm now feeling like I'm able to pass some of that knowledge I gained all those years back. Of course, liaising with parents, you know, that's my phone can be like a hotline sometimes. It's like you get a phone call and you've got another one. And dealing with parents on all kinds of issues and subjects, you know, to do with the students' education, to do with other things that are going on in and outside of school. The phone and the email inbox can be pretty busy at sometimes. And I'd say the biggest difficulty with my head of year position is not really having enough time to do everything that I need to do. To do it to the level that I would like to do it. On a Monday and a Tuesday especially, I only get one lesson, one 50-minute lesson for my head of year role. So, come Wednesday, there's usually quite a lot of catching up to do. With the years that have passed, I've kind of got to realise that I can only do everything I can in the time that I'm given. With support of other colleagues, we tend to do as good a job as we can. So that's my head of year role. And then PE stuff, it's so much more than teaching sport. I thought I was just going to be enjoying teaching sport for as many years as I was physically able to. But even teaching PE, it's so much more than that. You know, it's confidence building, it's teaching teamwork, self-esteem, enjoyment. I've always tried to teach in a way that allows every child to enjoy the lesson and to feel something positive from it, regardless of their love or ability in sport. And, you know, I actually find it quite a compliment when a student will come up to me and say, "Oh, Miss, I'm sorry, but I really don't like PE." Because they say it and they smile about it and they have a laugh, and then we get in, and then as soon as they're looking like they're enjoying themselves in the lesson, I'm ready to prompt them and say, "What was that you said about PE?" But some of them don't enjoy running around. Some of them, it's the worst subject, you know that the worst thing that they could possibly have to do is go out and play hockey in the cold or et cetera. But I really try hard to make it enjoyable and not pressurized at all. And not certainly not just focused on kids with the ability. So, and then there's extracurricular clubs, chances to play against other schools, which the kids really enjoy. So we're a very, very small, the smallest secondary school in Oxfordshire. And we have one of our closest rival school, should I say rival, is Wallingford, which is a sports college and is massive. But we frequently get good results against them, and that is always wonderful. when little Langtree turns up to their amazing AstroTurf or their sports hall with a huge climbing wall and then we beat them, it's like, you know, you kind of leave with a bit of a smile on your face. And so, yeah, that's kind of my job. That's where I'm at the moment. Yeah, work's pretty busy, but it is something I really enjoy, and I feel completely blessed to be doing a job that I enjoy. I've just had half term; it's been absolutely wonderful. You know, I'm not so career driven that it's my the complete focus of my life, but I don't begrudge having to get up and go to work, which I feel is a real blessing, and I'm grateful to the Lord for that. So the impact that being a Christian has on my job, it has a huge impact on my job. As I've said already, it's a real opportunity. My work is a real opportunity to make a difference to the lives of young people in those key years from 11 when they're a child. They come to us, they don't feel like they're children anymore. I mean, some of them are tiny. Callum's taller than some of them. And it's like they come in with these huge uniforms because their parents want them to last for 3 years or something. And these, you know, huge bags, and they're carrying every subject with them every day, even though it's Monday and they don't have that subject till Friday. And it takes them a few months to get used to the fact that they've got a locker they can put things in. And but, you know, they come in and they are really still children. They would never admit that. They would never feel like that or say that. But they are. They're still children. And when they leave us, it's only till 16. In today's day and age, that is a young adult. There are so many things that a 16-year-old can do, believes they can do. You know, I have endless conversations with parents that even before, you know, year 10, year 11, well, they say they're going out and they walk out the door and I can't stop them. That in today's day and age, I mean, it wasn't like this, I don't think, when I was 16. They feel like they're adults. They feel like they've kind of got to that stage already. So they're coming in children and leaving as young adults. And there is a huge amount. There is a huge amount that occurs in between those two stages. And they spend so much time at school that we have a real opportunity to make a difference in those young people's lives and to try and guide them to come in as children, to learn through the experiences and the mistakes that they make and leave as adults, that they can look in the mirror and they can be proud of the person that they've become, as well as the, you know, the education that they've got. And that's something, that's a conversation I have fairly often with students about just recognizing that they're on a journey and they will make mistakes all the way through it. And we've all been there too. They don't seem to understand that. So I don't think I'll try that line with Callum. I remember when I was that age, but... yeah, so, you know, to be able to have an opportunity to make a difference in their lives during those fundamental years of them growing up is a real privilege. There can be many difficulties the examples I've given you earlier. But and it's a real privilege, and I thank the Lord for the privilege of being able to help kids and parents through these difficulties. I try to remain patient, and I try to remain non-judgmental, and a lot of that comes from my faith, because who am I to judge them, you know, for something that they might have done, no matter how horrendous it might seem. You know, they may be something on social media that they've posted about someone. Some of the things these kids, they can be really unpleasant. But who am I to judge them for doing that? So, my faith really kind of helps me remain patient. And that George you were talking about in the, when you mentioned, those of you that were in the morning service, Graham, said a story about a man and his son in the shopping trolley, and the George, I'm like, yeah, I can relate to that, trying to keep myself patient and not necessarily say the first thing that comes to my mind when you hear of some of the things that the kids, especially in the behavior management, you know, when they've just kind of behaved in a way which is just ridiculous, that's the first thing you want to tell them, but you've got to try and remain patient. Work... I've never felt like work has been a means to an end. You know, I've heard lots of people kind of speak in that way, that, you know, it's what they do to get the pay at the end of the month, and you work hard because they want to do this on their house. Or I've never really seen it as a means to an end. It's always been something that I've really enjoyed and really been passionate about, and I think that is largely because of my faith. I see my work as a service to the Lord, and although I've kind of maybe felt like that in the past, I never really was able to think of it in enough depth, I don't think, until I heard Rich's sermon a few years ago. I don't know if you remember that, when he spoke of, it was the Home Truths series that was being preached on, and Rich preached a sermon on work. And that really, really touched me. That really, and you know, I've still got the notes that I made on that, and you know, refer to them and remember them, and remember that my work is a service to the Lord. Now, I have this. This, if those of you that saw me run out just before the service started, I needed to go and get this. I don't know if you remember these stickers that he handed out in that service. So this says, I am a mighty teacher before the Lord. Now, I don't know if you remember when Rich did that sermon, he gave everybody a sticker and you had to write your occupation. And I mean, he based it on Nimrod, who is in Genesis chapter 10, verse 9, who was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And Nimrod isn't talked about greatly in the Bible, but he's mentioned in Genesis as someone that carried out his work before the Lord, and hunting was his work, and therefore hunting was his worship. Hunting was his service to the Lord. So Rich based it on that, and I've kept that sticker ever since, and I wanted to put it somewhere where I would see it on a daily basis on my journey to work, because I'm quite often having days when it doesn't feel like I want to go into work, or it just feels like it's all getting a bit much, and you feel like you're kind of bogged down. And, you know, I wanted to have something that would remind me of the points that Rich made in that service that really kind of touched me and really spoke to me. So it's now, it's the visor from my car. It's like on the visor from my car, so it serves as a daily reminder. I might have to put some glue on it because it's losing its stickiness now that I've taken it off. But it serves as a daily reminder that I am a mighty teacher before the Lord, and each day when I go into work, no matter how I'm feeling, that should be my focus, and that should be what I recognize in my call to be there. So also, like, the attitude that we carry into work can show the work of God. These are four points that basically I remember Rich talking about in his sermon. Your attitude, not just when people are watching you, and your attitude not just when kind of you're in the spotlight and you're in front of assembly, or you're leading a meeting, or there's other people. The attitude that you bring to work should show something of the Lord and should show something of Christ. It affects the way I see people, treat people, the way I view people, staff, students, and parents, and that can be challenging sometimes, because sometimes my human instinct wants to take over, and I, you want to kind of say something which which would not be of the Lord. But people know I'm a Christian, and it's the minute you slip up and the minute you do the wrong thing that people would be ready to kind of mention that. Or, oh, I thought you were a Christian. Is that a Christian value? You know, so you've got to kind of be on your guard against that. And I remember that's something Richard really talked about. So, you know, when dealing with staff members that things are difficult with or things could be strained with, I try and remember to conduct myself in a way which is not of me, worldly Debbie Lackey, but something of my life in Christ. Doesn't always work, and I have to repent on that one regularly, but that is something that I try and do with students and with parents as well. I had an interesting conversation with some students just last week, actually, about they were talking to me about ghosts and what happened, you know, after you die, and that some people that they'd heard someone had died and then come back to life again, and then they were talking about what they saw when they were dead, and you know, so they were just like kind of having this conversation, and it was an opportunity to like tell them that something of my faith, to tell them that I was a Christian. This was what I believed. We have a number of fantastic Christian speakers that come and do assemblies in the school. So it's no, you know, talking about Jesus or mentioning Jesus and mentioning God is not something that, whoa, you know, crazy lady, where did that come from? It's not something which is unusual. So I was able to kind of talk to them about my side, but without feeling like, you know, they were interested, and without feeling like it was something that I was trying to convince them of. I just explained, you know, what my view on all of those things were. So trying to react in ways which, you know, show something of the Lord. We learned so much from how Jesus treated people. I mean, Jesus socialized and reached out to the people who were the lowest of the low. So, you know, in some of the circumstances when I'm dealing with, you know, certain kids, and I just, you find it difficult to understand why they have done something or why they behave in the way they do. Or parents, you know, how could they possibly be treating their child like this? It's, you know, really trying to take something from the way Jesus approached people and try and live some of that out in my relationships with them. Not writing people off, not writing kids off when they've done something wrong again and again and again, and they just don't seem to be getting the message, but giving them a second chance and spending time with them regardless of, you know, the mistakes that they've made or their social standing. That my work, as I have already mentioned, I also see as a gift from God. It's part of his provision for me. You know, the gifts of being sporty, I think, led me into teaching. But my job is so much more than that now, and I really thank the Lord for the gifts that he's given me that have enabled me to progress my career in the way that it has. And I'm thankful for that, and that I should try and show in the way that I work. Even when, you know, really tired and kind of not necessarily feeling motivated and not skipping into school with my backpack on, you know, I don't ever do that actually, but just when you're not feeling kind of right on top of your game, that's the time when you really need to kind of look at the sticker and remember that this work is a provision from God, and that, you know, there are so many people that would do absolutely anything to be able to have any kind of job, and here I am with a wonderful job. That really is something I need to be grateful for, need to be thankful for. But I don't always get it right. as a Christian, I should be a witness to the Lord. And, you know, by the way that I live, people, you know, my colleagues and the students know that I am a Christian, so that reflects on Christ, how I behave and how I live my life and how I conduct myself at work. It will either increase or decrease the attractiveness of the Lord Jesus Christ and being a Christian. So, and the attractiveness of the gospel. So, you know, I try to demonstrate through my behavior that I'm not just going to let myself be drawn into worldly ways. So this could be the language that I use. You know, some of the language, especially when a student has been particularly testing in a lesson, you know, in the staff can sometimes be quite fruity. That's one way of putting it. But and quite unpleasant. But you know, I'm careful with the language that I use, and the way I behave towards people, the way that I try not to get engrossed in conversations about, you know, about colleagues, or, you know, I'd just try and conduct myself in a way which shows something different to the things that we would get drawn into just by being human. As a Christian, I try to remember, I don't get it right by any means all the time, but that I represent Christ at all times. Wherever I go, whatever I say, and especially at work, and that it's important to consider the impression of that people have of Christ when they see or speak to me, I need to try and do this more and more and more. I need to ask myself the question: does the way I conduct myself honor Christ? And the answer to that is not always yes. But that is something that actually going through this process of preparing for this evening and going through the notes from Richard's sermon and everything, it's really brought this again fresh into my mind. So thank you for that, Graham. There's just one piece of scripture that I'd like to read out, which was the basis of that sermon. And I think wherever you look at scripture when it's relating to work, it is, you know, the general theme seems to be that we should be working to glorify God, and that that is our role as Christians. So Colossians 3 verse 17 says, "And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." And then verse 22 to 24, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it, not only when their eye is on you, to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ that you are serving." So that's a really special piece of scripture that kind of I try and refer to and will refer to more. I might even, I don't know, maybe that would be a bit much to have on my visor. I might get pulled over if I'm reading that at the lights. But just to have that, you know, I want to have that somewhere, maybe on my desk at work or some kind of a reminder of that. Because no matter what we do, you know, none of us are more important than each other. We're all working. As Christians, we're all working as a part of God's kingdom and to bring glory to God in no matter what way we are doing that, and in different callings. So the future, I don't really know what the future holds. I'm really happy in my job at the moment. I'm not career driven. I'm not, you know, looking for the opportunity to go for maybe a deputy head job or kind of the next step up. I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've been given thus far. However, and I am very excited about how God can use me in the future. Thank you. Is there any questions? Yeah, all schools will or should certainly have some kind of transition program. We've had, because we don't fill up from in the catchment area, it's very rural. So even though we only have 112 coming in, we usually get about 80, 85 kids from within the catchment area. So we get a lot of students that come in from out of catchment, say from the Caversham primary schools, which are big primary schools. And we get a lot of really positive feedback from parents of kids that come to us who have spoken about transition to parents that have got kids going to other schools. And, you know, that's not why we do it. That's not, you know, we really kind of, I really wanted to develop the program to meet the needs of the students and the parents. I think we've developed it over a number of years, and I think it's probably more thorough than a lot of secondary schools. But the part of the reason that we're able to do that as well is that it's such a small school. I can drive around in a week and go and visit them all. We have quite a lot of students coming in on their own from their primary school because of the fact that we get some in from outside. You know, some kids would come on their own from their primary school, which is quite daunting. So we can put on extra transition workshops for them, for all the singles. It's like a dating event. So all the singles, all the ones that are just coming in twos, come together and get to know each other. We can do extra stuff like that, I think partly that's due to the size of the school. But also colleagues have, one of my tutors is a year seven tutor, and her daughter has just started year seven at a much bigger comprehensive. And she said, it doesn't kind of compare really what we're able to do because of our size, really. So. Sorry?
Are there any other Christians on the staff?
Yes, there are. Yeah, in fact, Neris, who comes here, Neris McDonald, she teaches English. There's about six or seven of us. Which is, for a small school, that's quite a high ratio, actually. There was a CU. There isn't one at the moment. That was something that Chrissy Turner used to do, actually. Chrissy Turner, is it Turner? Towers, yeah, I knew it wasn't. Chrissy Towers used to come in and do it, but numbers really dwindled. I don't really know kind of exactly why that was, but there are a lot of kids that are involved in the youth in the local area. So some go to Wallingford, the Wallingford Baptist Church, and Goring Free Church have a really good youth setup as well. So some of the kids go there, but currently there isn't a CU. Yeah. Okay. Not from members of staff, no. We've got the head of Key Stage 4, so I'm head of lower school, the head of upper school is a scientist and very, science orientated. So we have some good discussions and there are people with completely different views, but I wouldn't say, there's like opposition, or I certainly don't feel like I'm treated any differently because of my faith, and which is a real blessing. Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of PSHE and assemblies and everything based on cyberbullying, and it's something that I kind of had to really learn about before I could deliver an assembly or a PSHE program on it, because I didn't really know I don't use all these different websites. I've never been on Twitter. I don't use Instagram. There's so many different things that I don't really know about. And I would say, it is an increasing problem. Things like Facebook, that kids are not supposed to go on until they're 13, I think. And, we've got year sevens, that there's issues with the year sevens on Facebook. And, invite the parents in and have a meeting about it. And it sometimes is a case of, everyone's got it. So, I didn't feel like I could possibly say no when everyone's got it. So it's having those conversations and trying to educate parents, but then also trying to educate the kids to use these things wisely and have an understanding about the effects that it can have on somebody. I had to deal with something a couple of weeks ago where a student had taken a video with her mobile phone and then posted it on the internet of another student. The video wasn't anything really unpleasant. It wasn't anyone being beaten or anything like that, but the student that was on the video didn't want to be videoed and is one of our more vulnerable students, and that was really quite shocking to see and to be involved in. But it's about educating the kids about about what the effect that this kind of thing can have on people long term. And the way that something that was really encouraging through that awful thing happening was that the way we found out about it and the way we frequently find out about things that go on and cyberbullying when it occurs is through other kids. So the fact that it's very public can also work for us because there are kids that see these things. They don't like it. They might not even know the kids involved, but they don't like it, and so they'll come and report it. And there's no access to Facebook or anything like that in school, so sometimes I have to take the kids over to the library, get them to log on the library there and print the stuff off. And it's just trying to get them to understand that this is not just fun and games, you know, saying something about someone that is personal, putting a photo on, putting a video on, this can affect someone's for life. This can have, you know, this is a type of bullying that needs to be taken very, very seriously. And regardless of how many assemblies you do, the kids can sometimes still not get the message that once something's on the internet, other people have access to it as well. So, we've had one or two incidents with kids from other schools, and that's where it gets really difficult because, I can't deal with what kids are doing at other schools. But it's really trying to get them to be aware of the dangers, but then also not going in with the, you just need to not be anywhere near the internet, because that message, you know, don't use Instagram, don't use Facebook, don't use this, don't use that. If you go in with the don't do it because you'll, you know, get hurt, that the first thing they're going to do when they get the opportunity is go to it. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Mm. Yeah. 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 Okay, let me try and remember the first question. the lessons are 50 minutes long, so there is a bit more time, and we don't force them to. It might sound not very hygienic, but I remember being, you know, made to hang my towel up on one side of the changing rooms and then walk through and then go through the shower, and you weren't allowed back to your towel until your hair was suitably wet. And it was a horrendous experience, and I vowed I would never do that to any child. Any, you know, going through puberty, it's just not the kind of experience you want to have, and can scar people for life, actually, in terms of their confidence and body image, etc. So we don't force the kids to shower. We encourage them to shower when they get home, but that's entirely up to them. And the lessons are 50 minutes long, so we do, you know, 5 minutes at the beginning and the end. We have a 40-minute lesson. And in terms of the curriculum, we every 6 weeks we're doing a different sport. So there's very, very few kids that dislike everything that we do. There might be some that really don't look forward to the rugby term, but then might enjoy, you know, something like badminton or basketball, or and it's really trying to get them to appreciate that being active and being healthy is a good thing, and it's not just about loving sport and having that desire to score the winning goal and that vision to be the best. It's not about that at all. It's about appreciating what your body can do and helping you to develop that to be the best that it can be, and not necessarily in comparison to anybody else, but the benefits of being healthy. Now, at Key Stage 4, so with the Year 10 and 11 students, 15, 16-year-olds, with the we have all the students together that are not particularly sporty. They've not really shown kind of the affinity towards it. They don't particularly enjoy it. We have all of those kids together, and we do a double session, actually. And part of that is for the reason that you said. And they really enjoy it, actually. We do a whole range of different activities with them. I've just been doing a cardio box section and aerobic section 6 weeks with them, so that they are doing things that are going to keep them healthy and try and give them experiences that even though they don't like sport and they don't feel like they're particularly sporty, they've enjoyed the benefits of exercising and realized that it's not all about being competitive. You can go to a gym, you can do a fitness class, you can go and do circuits, and you can enjoy being healthy without necessarily being sporty and competitive. So. Yeah, no. I think a lot of it would be kind of, you know, what motivates them to feel like they're being successful. So Michael Gove is not having a particularly positive impact on teachers at the moment, because at every opportunity he's telling teachers what a bad job they're doing, and that it's, you know, we're in this position in the world and it's so much better in, you know, career, or, you know, and all these different things that we should be doing and that we're just not doing a good job. So if I think for some staff, that constant kind of battering, maybe from government or from the top, can wear people down. I think it also depends on what your focus is, and it can seem a little bit repetitive. So if you are a subject teacher and you've been teaching for 15 years, you're going to have been teaching the same text to that year 11 class, you know, for the majority of that time. And so I guess it can feel a little bit repetitive. And it depends on the, you know, as a Christian, you feel like your work is service to the Lord. And so that gives you a renewed sense of enthusiasm for each year group that comes in. And you can kind of see it as a opportunity to, over 5 years, to work with them. And that can all make it feel very, very fresh. Whereas I guess if you don't have that perspective and it's just like, oh, here we go again, you feel like you're on an endless cycle, that can maybe wear people down a little bit. And the pressures of things like Ofsted and, you know, all the pressures are increasing, and it's very much, something that, a phrase that is thrown about in secondary schools at the moment is to keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is the grades. And the main thing is that, you know, what grades this current year 11 group get. That's the main thing. That's what we're fundamentally here for. And that can really, you know, the pressure of that can be really wearing, and have to compare favorably with the year before, whereas the year before were completely different kids. So, you know, that's not taken into account by the government, by Ofsted, by things. So if that message of it's all about the grades is the message that they hear the loudest, that I think could and does, you know, I have conversations with staff, that does wear people down and make people think, actually, I might go and rent out jet skis in Spain, was a conversation I had a few weeks ago. Yeah.